watching Agenda Awani with me, Lukman Haris, broadcasting from the sidelines of the Energy Asia Conference, where taking center stage, of course, is discussions on where we are in terms of our transition to renewables and what challenges and opportunities lie ahead. Now, one of the challenges, really, is how do we quantify and measure the impact that we are bringing in terms of our sustainability initiatives, whether be it from the corporate sector or the public sector. Here with me to talk just about that is Mr. Espen Melum. He's the head of energy for the World Economic Forum. Espen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, and a pleasure to be invited.
So I'd like to start with the Energy Transition Index, because really how we measure things have not been up to par in terms of our journey towards sustainability and towards renewables, mass adoption of renewables. So when we talk about the Energy Transition Index, what are the key positives and negatives from this year's index for Malaysia and also globally?
Yeah. So Fostering Effective Energy Transition 2023 is a report we're launching today. It contains an index that actually benchmarks energy systems of 120 countries on 46 indicators. It's not only about sustainability. Sustainability is really part of it, but also it's about the equity of energy, and it's about the security of supply. So that we call the energy triangle. The index measures all of that, and as well as the transition readiness. Let me maybe highlight a couple of global results and maybe some findings for ASEAN and before coming to Malaysia. Is that okay?
Yeah, sure, yeah. Please.
On the global side, we actually see a lot of progress. 95% of countries have improved their scores over the last 10 years. Mm. But in the last 2 years, we have seen this progress stopping or stalling, if you like. And the reason for that are the global shocks and the energy crisis. So we have seen that sustainability has been improving through those years, but equity has been suffering. Mm-hmm. And that's due to the cost of energy and a bit of decline on the energy access side as well in some countries, especially in Africa. But on the positive side, globally, we see that major emerging economies such as China, India, Brazil, and Indonesia are actually improving and they're catching up with the developed economies. You also see some of the big advanced economies like Germany and the US, Korea progressing. But overall, we need faster progress to meet some of the climate challenges. So that's for the global side. On the ASEAN side, actually, Malaysia is the best performer, 35 out of 120 countries. So congratulations.
Thank you.
In ASEAN, we see actually a better picture on the equity side than globally. Mm-hmm. But sustainability is suffering a little bit. The reasons for that is probably the somewhat high energy intensity of the economy. So the units of energy you need to produce one unit of GDP, but also the carbon intensity. So how much CO2 is emitted on top of that energy production.
Yeah, you've touched on a very interesting point, because for emerging markets, this total switch to renewables, for example, or green energy, it's probably easier said than done, because they're exactly that. They're emerging, they're developing. So rapid economic development often takes center stage, as opposed to European countries where that has been achieved. So how do you see the balance being struck between maintaining economic growth, the momentum of economic growth, but also not slowing down on your transition or journey towards renewables and green energy?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a very important point you're pointing out. So it's not only about sustainability and renewables. That's critically important. Without transition to renewables and other forms of clean energy, be it clean hydrogen or be it electromobility, other things as well, we won't meet the climate commitments. And many countries, including Malaysia as well, has met a net zero commitment by 2050. So the direction of travel is clear, and renewables will be a key partner. But also we need to think about the economy and the affordability of energy and the equity in that transition, as well as energy security, which we definitely saw during the global energy crisis. But there doesn't need to be a trade-off. Actually, renewables nowadays have become quite cheap, and they together with other forms of energy, be it gas, be it some other forms of clean energy, they can really provide much more of a base load at a lower cost. So we have seen some big countries, emerging economies. China, for instance, is the biggest investor in renewables. India is also catching up very fast with big targets. Vietnam in this region has also been advancing pretty fast. So actually it could be win-win for the economy and for energy transition. And I know that Malaysia has also set some very ambitious targets on the renewables front.
Yep. And I understand that the ETI, the Energy Transition Index that we talked about earlier, has also updated its measurements and indicators. The index now measures the performance of each country's energy systems in the dimensions of equity, as you mentioned before, energy security, and also environmental sustainability, as you've alluded to just now, and also the readiness of the enabling environment for energy transition. So how do you measure all these accurately?
Indeed, an index can never fully mirror the reality on the ground. And the reasons for that is that the energy system is complex, and also the data availability. So we're measuring 120 countries. We need data for 120 countries. But in sum, these 46 indicators covering these different dimensions gives a very, very good indication of where the energy system is heading and what are some of the strong and weak points. It will never be accurate, but it's a tool to help inform the transition.
How much of your data or how much of the index relies on voluntary reporting by companies as well as governments? Because we've got concerns such as greenwashing by companies. Mm-hmm. So how much do we rely on them reporting the data to bodies such as WEF, where it possibly cannot be independently verified?
Yeah, so we rely on trustworthy data sources. We don't do primary data ourselves, but we get data from the UN, from the International Energy Agency, from the World Bank, and from others. So we don't take surveys nor company reporting per se. Right. We rely on data from these sources, which are, again, often collected from the national statistical authorities. So, of course, we have to trust that data. Sometimes that data will have a time lag, so we cannot reflect the very most recent developments. But overall, there's good quality of data, and there's a holistic approach, as well as we can compare across nations.
Right. So, talking about measuring transition momentum, so for Malaysia, what have been the upward and downward catalysts for our transition momentum, and what is going to be the main upside and downside risks or catalysts for our transition momentum moving forward in the next few years?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, Malaysia is already in a strong position. So starting from a strong position as number 35 on the global index, best in ASEAN. And some of the upwards catalysts here is obviously the highly educated population. There's also been some policy developments that are very interesting. So policy is critically important to support energy transition. So, for instance, the net zero target, the national energy policy 2022 to 2040, which really positions energy at the core of the development of the nation. There's also some renewables targets, I think 45% by 2030, which has been increased to something like 70% by 2050. So the ambition is there. Mm. Then, of course, what really needs to happen is for these targets to be translated into very concrete incentives for the business to invest in. So that's maybe where even more work can be done to transform these policy signals into really concrete support for the industry to invest. What we have seen as well is that the energy intensity of the economy has been improving, but the carbon intensity still has some room for improvement. So how much CO2 is emitted on the top of the energy consumption? And that's where I think getting more renewables into the energy mix to replace maybe some of the coal or complement some of the coal in the mix, etc., can be very important. I know as well there's about 4 million rooftops in this country. If you can unlock that as a potential to really for people to participate in the energy revolution, I think that would be a tremendous resource for the country.
But that's the thing, isn't it? That relates back to the debate of costs. I mean, I want to install solar panels on my rooftop, for example, but not everyone can afford it. It does take time. It does take massive investments when you talk about the transition to renewables and a greener way of doing things. But we don't really have time. So do you think, what sort of boost or nudge do you think the government can give to speed up these efforts a bit, maybe in the form of incentives, tax breaks, etc.?
Yeah, so each country has a different situation and different pathways, and the government will have to make their choices that is best for the country. What we see internationally is that some of the emerging and developing economies have actually been fast movers. Yep. If you think about it, Brazil was the first mover in using auctions to get renewables into the market, and other countries replicated. Then we have India has set a big target for renewables and have a, you know, policy has followed. Now the industry is investing. We see also countries like China had really invested in the grid, and the grid is critically important to be able to get the maximum value out of the renewables. They of course also have bigger financial resources than many countries, but these examples and some others, like Thailand is now pioneering electromobility in this region, show that it's really possible to do something with smart policies so you get the right signals without too high cost. Of course, you need to invest. You need to get investment from abroad and from within the countries. And then also you need the consumers to be aware of the possibilities and how they can save energy, what they can do, and also there needs to be economic for them. And that's the challenge.
Has it been more difficult for you to try and persuade investments from the corporate sector or the public sector?
So we don't persuade investments. We are a catalyst and a platform to inform decision makers. Then investors will have to invest where they see the opportunities. And I think there are opportunities where the government can be a first mover. I'll give you one example. Mm-hmm. Hydrogen. Clean hydrogen is now a very topical issue in many countries, also in this country, is coming on the debate. That's a very capital intensive form of energy where infrastructure needs to be developed. There, the governments will need to find ways to take off some of the risks for the corporate side. And I expect some of the bigger countries, maybe bigger financial resources, to be the first movers, but it's absolutely possible to be a fast follower. Right. And Malaysia could be one of those countries. But the big share of the investment need to come from the private sector, and they need to be incentivized.
Right. So what are the main challenges for the private sector? Besides obvious financial concerns, uncertainty on returns of investment, do you think there's also internal resistance and just a basic lack of awareness from the corporate sector in general to invest more towards this initiative?
Yeah, I think the corporate sector can always do more. And a lot of corporates also have set net zero targets, for instance, but very few have transformed those targets into very concrete plans and really changed their investment strategies. You have some companies have turned around and some are turning around. But today as well, there is still need for oil, there's still need for natural gas. The energy needs of society need to be met. And while we're investing in the new system, we also need to invest in the old system. So I think different companies are trying to find their way in this transition while still making money. But I would like to point out there are a lot of new opportunities for innovative companies and startups as well in this space.
Right. So it takes time, it's very capital intensive. What are some low-hanging fruits that we can achieve for now, whether it be by the public sector, governments, or the private sector?
Yeah. So I think maybe two low-hanging fruit and an intermediate hanging fruit, right, if you like. So the two low-hanging fruits is, one is energy efficiency. So people need to be aware of what they can do to save energy. You saw, for instance, after the Fukushima crisis in Japan, how they needed to save energy and really engage people, you know, using digital technologies to inform people. Also in Europe this year and elsewhere on the back of the energy crisis, they saved a lot of energy over a year and consumers participated. I think if consumers were aware of the importance of saving energy and, you know, the cost they can save by doing it and how they do it, I think it can inform people and achieve a lot. That's a low-hanging fruit. A second partly low-hanging fruit is also scaling renewables, especially solar. I think in this country, there's a huge potential, both distributed, I mentioned the rooftops, but also larger scale with some small adjustments. Perhaps I think that revolution can almost be unlocked pretty quickly. Then the maybe the intermediate hanging fruit, if I may, is the electromobility, which is now coming in many, many countries. And I think there one can achieve something with some incentives, monetary and non-monetary incentives, and getting people used to electromobility as well.
I think in a lot of countries throughout the past few years, including Malaysia, among others due to the COVID-19 pandemic, focus is put by the government on local economic issues, cost of living, inflation, etc. And therefore we've seen probably less priority being put on initiatives such as renewables.
Yeah.
Are you optimistic that this trend will reverse and there'll be renewed push by governments for the transition towards renewables maybe within the next 2-3 years once the bulk or the brunt of the COVID-19 economic impact is over?
Yeah, I think so. I think the shorter answer is yes, I'm positive. We actually seen, coming back to our index, we have seen that the cost of electricity in this country and in ASEAN has actually been coming down, both for industry and consumers, and also the fossil fuel subsidies have been reducing. So overall, very positive actually. And my point is that there doesn't have to be a trade-off between renewables and the cost of energy. Of course, renewables can't solve it all. You need some molecules, you need oil, you need need gas as well. But electrification of the economy is coming, and that needs to be the clean type of electrification. And renewables need to go hand in hand with other sources of energy. There's a lot of room to increase, and I think there's no necessary trade-off because the cost of renewables has really come down, and that's been shown in many other developing economies as well.
Right. Moving forward, the big target, net zero by 2050. Are you confident it can be achieved? And if yes, why? Because in some cases, in Malaysia's case at least, it has been pushed back, or at least pushed forward, I should say, in the past. So how and why are we confident that this time we'll meet the target?
Yeah. So globally, what we see is that 1.5 degrees target is increasingly coming out of reach. Right. And the reason for that is that the national determined commitments, the NDCs, are not sufficient to reduce the emissions fast enough. And what you need is all sectors to contribute, and you need a whole workover of the energy system, both demand and supply. And this is not currently happening fast enough. One need is obviously for all countries to move towards net zero by 2050. And it's great that countries have, like Malaysia, have committed to that. That's a mega challenge, not only for Malaysia, but for other countries. Even 2050 sounds like a long time apart. To really transform the energy system takes time. You need to start now. I'm optimistic it can be done, but it requires tremendous efforts, both on the side of the government, private sector, and people like you and I, to make that transformation. It's not going to happen automatically.
Yeah, the blueprint for each country in this journey is different because obviously we've got different types of populations, demography, socio-economic factors. So it's not so easy for, say, Malaysia to follow in the footsteps of Europe or US 100% because it's very different. The blueprint is very different. So what best practices should we emulate in Malaysia that replicates and has the highest chance of success for this country? What template do we follow that is suitable for us?
Yeah, so there's not one recipe that fits everybody, but some recipes fit many. Hmm. So by that, I mean that one can learn from examples. One historic example, I mentioned Brazil. They were the first one to start the auctions for renewable energy, and everybody replicated that, even the developed economies. And the reason that was smart, it was actually bringing the cost down for renewables. And now they do something called reversed auctions. So that's an even smarter way of getting the cost down. On electromobility, my home country, Norway, is the global leader. There's more than 80% of new vehicles is now pure electric. But that's really an outlier. And the reason for that is there are some financial incentives that Norway can do because it's a rich country. But there are also some non-financial incentives, like you can drive in the bus lane, you can get access to some parking, easy parking downtown, etc. Some cheap charging. So there are ways that country can nudge this. And I mentioned that China has really made a huge transformation. They're the best Asian country on our global index, number 17. And they're coming from far. They're invested in the energy transition over the years. So I think looking at what is happening in China, I think it's one example. Obviously, India as well has been investing now a lot in the energy system and transition. And then I think closer to home, we have seen Vietnam has rapidly expanded the renewables. Of course, now they also face some challenges in terms of the grids, how to kind of adapt that. But I think at the ASEAN level, a lot can be done through collaboration. One concrete example of that is the ASEAN interconnecting grid, electricity grid. I think that can be a game changer for many countries here in getting maximum value out of the renewable resources you have here.
Right. Now, there has been some cynicism. Now, people keep saying that the young are more invested than the older people in climate change and all these issues that we're talking about, simply because they'll be around for much longer. So do you think this is the case? Do you think that once this generation comes of age, progress will be multiplied in terms of speed and impact just simply because they are more invested in it, because they're in it for the long run?
Yeah. Well, we have seen the Youth for Climate movement, right? That came about, I think, a little bit before COVID, but also continued through COVID. That was interesting because it was not only the Western nations. This was a global movement, of course, with some stronger connotation in some countries. But I think there's a key here that the younger generations start realizing that this is our planet. We're going to live on this planet for decades. It's not looking good. We need to, you know, voice our opinion. We need to do something. Then what people are struggling with is, what can I do as a citizen, right? And then everybody has to work with their levers and what they can do. And, you know, voicing their opinion is kind of a start.
Right. So to the people out there, lastly, to the people out there, regardless of age, regardless of where they're from, looking for what, like we've mentioned just now, a low-hanging fruit, some simple solution that they can do. If they ask, what can I do today to play my part? Something simple, something I can do instantly.
Yeah.
What do you say to them?
So one thing is that talk to your children about this, right? And engage them and talk to them about what they can do to make it more a sustainable place. If you're a child, raise this in your school with your teachers. Do we have kind of some education around this? Finding solutions. If you're a businessman, invest in the things that, yes, make money, but also is good for the future. And if you're in the government, you can make a difference in terms of creating the policy environment that can change this.
All right, Espen, thank you very much. Espen Melum, Head of Energy for the World Economic Forum. Hope to see you. You don't come by often. Hope to see you in a better Malaysia, better positioned to actually make significant milestones in our journey towards renewables with the help of WEF. You out there, you can play your part by doing the simplest things. As he has mentioned just now, we all have a part to play in this planet that we share, not just now, but also our future generations. That's it for this episode. I'll see you in the next one. Thank you for watching.